Welcome to episode 266 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, biohacker and author of What, When, Wine. Lose weight and feel great with paleo-style meals, intermittent fasting, and wine. And I'm here with my co-host, Cynthia Thurlow, nurse practitioner and author of Intermittent Fasting Transformation, the 45-day program for women to lose stubborn weight, improve hormonal health, and slow aging. For more on us, check out ifpodcast.com, melanieavalon.com, and cynthiathurlow.com. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this show do not constitute medical advice or treatment, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. So, pour yourself a mug of black coffee, a cup of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Hi, friends. I'm about to tell you how to get one of my favorite things to support your fast for completely free. Yes, completely free. So here's the thing. When people feel tired, crampy, or weak during fasting, they usually blame that on a lack of food. And true, that's certainly part of it. All of those symptoms can be due to low blood sugar, which is hypoglycemia. However, did you know there's another major cause of those symptoms? That would be inadequate electrolytes. Low electrolytes can affect anyone who fasts because actually food is our main source of electrolytes. And during a fast, you're not consuming anything. You also excrete more sodium in a fasted state. So you have fewer electrolytes coming in during a fast and more going out. That makes it super easy for deficiencies to develop, manifesting in things like cramps, headaches, brain fog, lack of energy, and other uncomfortable symptoms. But thankfully, you can prevent this with electrolytes. So what's the problem? Most of the electrolyte products on the market are either loaded with sugar or woefully lacking in actual electrolytes. That's why I and so many of you guys are obsessed with Element. Element was created by former research biochemist Rob Wolf with KetoGains founder Luis Villasenor. Element has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to move the needle and keep you feeling and performing your best. Plus, friends, so many electrolyte supplements out there are full of so much stuff that you don't want to be putting in your body. Element has zero sugar, zero artificial colors, zero dodgy ingredients that might be holding you back. So yes, you can drink the raw, unflavored Element during your fast to help support it without breaking it, while of course supporting your hydration in general. It's especially important if you train fasted, since you lose extra electrolytes through sweat. And guess what? Research actually suggests that sodium supplementation mitigates weight rebound after a fast. Element also comes in so many incredible flavors for your eating window. They've got flavors like citrus salt, which, by the way, makes an awesome low-carb margarita, raspberry salt, mango chili, chocolate salt, my favorite, watermelon, and so much more. And I'm so excited because Element has a fantastic offer for you guys. You can get free electrolytes. Just go to drinklmnt.com/ifpodcast to get a free sample pack with any purchase. Yep, you can try all the Element flavors for completely free. Just go to drinklmnt.com/ifpodcast to claim this free deal. And we'll put all this information in the show notes.
One more thing before we jump in. Did you know that common ingredients found in skincare and makeup products can actually disrupt your endocrine system? These endocrine disruptors are a silent threat that can have significant impact on your health, including something that is very important to me, fertility. Your skin is your body's largest organ, and what you put on it matters. Endocrine disruptors are chemicals that interfere with the natural hormonal communication in the body. It also matters during pregnancy, and that's one of the reasons I pay close attention to what I put on my skin while being pregnant. Studies have shown that exposure to endocrine disruptors can affect both male and female fertility. For women, these disruptors can lead to irregular menstrual cycles, ovulation issues, and even polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS. In men, they can reduce sperm quality and quantity, making it even more challenging to conceive. But it's not just about fertility. When it comes to fat loss, one of the reasons reasons that endocrine disruptors can get in the way of fat loss is because a lot of our toxins are actually stored in our fat. It's a way that our bodies protect us from those toxins. These toxic compounds can even work synergistically, amplifying their harmful effects and making it that much harder to shed unwanted body fat. All of these reasons are why I am obsessed with a company called Beauty Counter. The founder actually started the company when she learned about the potential dangers of toxic chemicals and their link to health issues, specifically miscarriages and infertility. While pregnant, I make sure to only use Beauty Counter products. It's one of the only makeup lines that is officially recommended from the Environmental Working Group. What really sets Beauty Counter apart is their unwavering commitment to protecting us, the consumers, from the hidden dangers that lurk in conventional beauty products. Beauty Counter goes above and beyond, rigorously screening every single ingredient that goes into their products, ensuring that they are safe, clean, and free from harmful toxins. They're not just a beauty brand, they're a movement for change, advocating for stronger regulations in the beauty industry. With Beauty Counter, I know that I can trust that the skincare and makeup that I use are not only effective, but also safe for me and my family. They have skincare lines for every skin type, as well as so many other incredible products. I absolutely love their overnight resurfacing peel. It's my favorite way to get anti-aging benefits in a skincare product. The makeup is absolutely amazing. I have tried alternative beauty products in the past and none of them truly performed. But with Beauty Counter, the foundation is so amazing. It makes me feel like my skin can breathe and it looks so dewy and beautiful. You can shop with me at beautycounter.com/VanessaSpina. New customers can use the code CLEANFORALL20 for 20% off their first order. Beautycounter.com/VanessaSpina. All right, friends, now back to the show.
Hi, everybody, and welcome. This is episode number 266 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon, and I am so, so excited and thrilled to be here with our new co-host, Cynthia Thurlow. Cynthia, welcome to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
So listeners, you might be familiar with this change that happened. We talked about it on the episode last week with Jen. We sent some email announcements, talked about it on social media, but basically the story leading up to this whole change and transition that we are very excited about. It's been an amazing 5 years having this show with Jen Stevens, who is a wonderful partner, and we've just really had a beautiful time doing this show. But just due to her life's transitions and what she's doing, and she has two other podcasts, and she's focusing on her personal social media community, Delay Don't Deny community that she has, we decided that it was time to part ways on this show. So the backstory that happened, and I knew I had to find the perfect co-host for the show. And honestly, the first thing I thought was that Cynthia Thurlow would be the perfect co-host for this show. I didn't know if it would actually manifest. I was hopeful, but I put it out there to the universe, and I was so, so thrilled that Cynthia was even remotely open to the idea. Our personal connection leading up to this, I've had Cynthia on the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast twice. I've also been on her show, Everyday Wellness, which is absolutely incredible. And Cynthia herself is basically a legend in the intermittent fasting community. I'm sure that many of you are probably very familiar with her, but actually I'll probably just be asking Cynthia more to tell her story about all of this, but she has a TED talk that went viral about intermittent fasting called Intermittent Fasting Transformational Technique. If you look at it today, it has over 11 million views, which is crazy. And she recently released the fabulous book, Intermittent Fasting Transformation. And for my second episode with her on the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast, we dive deep into that. And she's been everywhere, all over the news, like ABC and Fox and Medium and Entrepreneur. And on top of all of that, as if those credentials aren't enough, Cynthia and I are personally friends. We even
before us being co-hosts now, we're talking most days. She's a beautiful, kind, amazing, incredible human being. She's also a nurse practitioner, so she really has the savvy of the science and the clinician knowledge when it comes to all of this. So when I say that Cynthia is the perfect co-host for the show, and I am just so excited, I really mean that. So again, Cynthia, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, you know, it's ironic that I think back to when I first got an email from you in 2019 to interview me for your podcast, that was really the first opportunity we had, and we became fast friends. And certainly it's just been a very organic friendship and conversation. And I was telling my team earlier today that in so many ways, you inspire me to be a better interviewer, a better podcast host, to be curious about the world as I always have been, but to do it through a different lens. And so it's really exciting to have us both together to be able to tackle some of the topics that come up for our listeners and for, you know, people that follow us on social media. I was laughing and sharing with Melanie that I was already getting DMs with questions about things specifically our listeners hope that we will discuss on this podcast. And so that's really exciting. And as many of you probably already know, there's a real natural ease to our discussions. And so my hope and my intent is to continue to provide really valuable conversations to my community, to your community, to this joint community, and to be able to honor, you know, the wonderful work that both you and Jen have done in the past, and, you know, offer a different perspective moving forward as a clinician and as a human being, and certainly as a fasting aficionado as well.
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that. That is so, so kind. And yeah, I was just thinking about how, because you and I talk offline all the time, and we often talk in, you know, like voice messages via text. And so many of our conversations could be podcast episodes just by themselves, because we're always just talking about health-related stuff and fasting. And so I just think there's so much content that we can dive into. That actually answers a question I was going to address for the audience. So the format of the show is going to be staying, you know, pretty similar to the way it has been. Still listener questions. We're going to be answering them, but we will be bringing Cynthia's new perspective. So it'll be really, really exciting to dive deep into all of that. Today's episode is actually going to be more of an interview style to introduce you guys to Cynthia. So no listener questions today. They will be coming in all of the future episodes. And actually, I will go ahead and mention this now. So we have sort of an exciting announcement. As you guys know, there is the mysterious missing episode number one of this show, which is not available to the general public, and we get questions about it all the time. Well, we now have it. It's not going to be public, so it's not on the feed right now. But if you would like to get it, we came up with a sort of fun little incentive that we thought we would do to welcome Cynthia and also give you guys access to that episode. So if you have written an iTunes review, go into iTunes and update it. And or if you haven't written one before, you can write a new review. And all you have to do is, you know, review the podcast, but include in there somewhere what you are excited about or what you're looking forward to with Cynthia being on board. So anything that in particular you're excited to experience with her. And send a screenshot of that review to questions@ifpodcast.com. And then we will send you a link so that you can listen to the mysterious episode number one, which will also be a nice little thing to do in honor of Jen as well. So very excited about that. So, okay, to start things off, Cynthia, for those who are not familiar with you, would you like to tell them a little bit about your personal story? So what was your personal health journey? What led you to intermittent fasting and why you are doing what you're doing today?
It's a great question, and one that I think is really important, because I would imagine that the span of the IF podcast audience is probably 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. And so we can speak about it from two different perspectives. So the easiest way to explain it was that I fell into intermittent fasting because I hit the wall of perimenopause. And for anyone who's unfamiliar with what that represents, it's the 5 to 10 years preceding menopause. So I was in my early 40s doing all the wrong things. I had a very demanding job. I, at the time, worked for a really high-level cardiology practice in the Northern Virginia suburbs. So I was seeing patients in clinic and the hospital. I had two young boys. I had a husband who did a lot of international travel, and I probably wasn't sleeping enough and was doing the wrong types of exercise. And that represents doing things like CrossFit in the context of all those other variables. And so I got stuck. You know, I woke up one morning, I was exhausted, and I stayed exhausted. It wasn't getting better no matter how much sleep I had. And I was starting to feel like I was becoming increasingly sensitive to the foods I ate. And for the first time in my adult life, I was weight loss resistant. It didn't matter what I did. I couldn't lose the weight that I had, you know, packed on during this time frame. And so a colleague had mentioned intermittent fasting to me, and this was completely contrary to anything I had learned as a clinician. You know, I used to tell my patients, eat to stoke your metabolism and eat every 2 to 3 hours and make sure you have snacks and things that make me cringe at this point. And so I rather, you know, tentatively started fasting and felt so much better. Didn't lose weight automatically. Let me be clear about that. But I felt so much more cognitively clear. I had so much more energy. I started sleeping better. And so then I started weaving it into the work that I was doing with my own patients. You know, I would talk about it, which of course their expression when I talked about fasting was probably the same expression I had when it was brought up with me, that it seemed completely contrary to what, you know, the antiquated dogma had been. And so my journey really started with that. But as it pertains to how I got, you know, so well known in this space, was that about six years ago now, I left clinical medicine. I'd gotten to a point where I was really struggling with the volume of prescriptions I was writing, that I felt very unaligned with the traditional allopathic model. Although let me be clear, you know, if you're emergently or urgently sick, allopathic medicine is where it's at in terms of technology. We just don't do a great job with prevention, and we certainly don't do a great job with chronic disease management. And so for me, it was really, I was so disaligned with how I had trained. And so I left clinical medicine without a business plan, which I would not recommend doing, and kind of leaped into the space and said, I'm going to be successful. My husband thought I was insane. And I did become successful pretty quickly because I started attracting the same type of woman that I was, you know, middle-aged women where there's not a lot of emphasis on care. Physicians and other nurse practitioners, other providers don't really know what to do with us in this stage of life. Sometimes they offer things up like oral contraceptives to quote unquote control our menstrual cycles. They offer things like IUDs and ablations and hysterectomies. And then sometimes they offer up hormones. But the point of why I'm sharing this is that it really empowered me to want to be someone that would speak on behalf of all middle-aged women because we were so poorly represented. And then quite frankly, when I started really digging into management for women in middle age, it became even more glaringly obvious that we were so underrepresented. And so, you know, being an introvert, I decided to do a TED Talk. I thought this was this really safe way to, you know, work through my introverted nature. And I was offered one in probably October of 2018 and talked about the super sexy topic of perimenopause, very relevant, I promise. And very soon after, I was offered the opportunity to do a second one. And it was very special to me because I was going to be delivering this talk in South Carolina. And for many listeners, they may not know that's where I was born. My father was finishing his PhD at University of South Carolina. And so South Carolina has always held very special memories. I still have a lot of family there. And I kept saying, this is going to be great. I'm going to, you know, do this second talk in South Carolina. This will be wonderful. I have family that'll be able to come. But fast forward to, you know, a couple of weeks before then, I actually got quite sick. I almost died. And part of my healing journey was convincing myself and my children that I was okay. And so the intent that I set for that second talk that you alluded to at the very beginning of this introduction was really just to show my kids I was okay, that I had gone from, you know, being a super healthy person to suddenly being, you know, critically sick. And I did that talk with a ruptured appendix. And really the rest is history, because when that talk came out in May of 2019, it changed everything. And I didn't realize that I would be standing on a platform, not only for women, but also as an expert in intermittent fasting. So I very humbly share that story because all of those pieces all now make sense, although at the time they did not.
I forgot that your experience at the hospital and everything had happened prior to that. That talk. It's interesting because it's something we've talked about before, because I had my own experience in the hospital with my severe anemia and being admitted and all of that. And it's an experience, unless you've had that, where you could, in theory, technically die and you're in the hospital, it provides such a layer of empathy to other people who are going through health challenges, you know, on whatever spectrum that may be of severity. Not that I love that you went through that or that I went through that, but I think it's really nice that we both have gone through that and we can empathize with, you know, people who have struggled with, you know, health conditions to a really intense effect.
I agree. And I think my mindset is always through adversity comes opportunity. And for many people, no one would have questioned if I hadn't done that talk. No one would have ever questioned it. But to me, so much of it was proving to my children that I was okay. And I think for anyone who's listening, we've all had instances in our lives where, you know, are you showing up? And for me, that's a large part of, you know, who I am as an individual. And although I didn't realize it at the time, how critically important that was on so many levels, because I think there's this forgotten kind of misnomer that individuals don't realize that when we have those circumstances, when we have those instances where we have opportunities that come up after going through an illness, after, you know, going through, you know, a struggle, and it doesn't have to be something health related, it allows us to show up differently. And so I say all the time that, you know, those little micro decisions that made no sense to me at the time now are so abundantly clear to me why they happened as they did. And, you know, I sit in complete gratitude. I say to everyone, I think as a clinician, you know, how many thousands and thousands of patients I took care of over 20 years, until I got sick, I really didn't appreciate and understand how powerless you are when you're lying in a bed and you're that sick. Like, I remember there were very specific nurses. I had great nursing care and I had terrible nursing care. And it's not just about nurses. As a nurse, I can say, like, there were certain nurses I would pray when they came on board, because I could relax. Because as sick as I was aware of how sick I was. And I had such great physician care. And I was really fortunate, because not everyone has that. But I was so, so grateful. And I remember, like, really coming from a place of gratitude and deciding that from that day forward, that I would in some way practice gratitude, because it is a practice, every single day for the rest of my life. And that I would ensure that if I was given this opportunity, and it was a choice, if I was given this opportunity to live, I was not going to play small. Like, I was not going to be fearful or timid or tentative, because I, as an introvert, I sometimes can, the before me, I might not have jumped at that chance. Whereas the new me is always, everything is either a heck no or a hell yes. And there's no in between. That's how my life exists. Just like when you asked me if I might be interested in being your co-host, it was a heck yes. There was no hesitation. And so that's the world that I now exist in. And it's what I would encourage anyone who's listening to consider. You know, how are you living your life? How are you showing up? How are you practicing gratitude?
I am so happy to hear you say this, because the gratitude piece is just so important to me as well. And I think it's so powerful. And I'm really excited that we can, you know, integrate this whole role of mindset into our conversations. So, this is wonderful. I remember when I had my hospital experience, I as well, like the whole nurse thing, like some that are not so pleasant and some that were amazing. And when I did have the great ones like you, I was just so grateful. I just felt like I was just like, how do I, you know, thank this person for being here with me during this time of darkness? So yay for gratitude. I have a question about the TED Talk. Did it go viral right away or did that happen later?
No, and it's interesting. I knew that it was going to come out in May. And actually, I was standing, I'll never forget where I was. I was standing in line. My kids were getting measured for swimsuits. And yes, you get measured for swimsuits because they were competitive swimmers at the time. And a colleague texted me and she said, I think this is going to be different. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she said, your talk is out and it's got a lot of views. So the first day I had 89,000 views. And that was a little overwhelming because I had just gotten through telling my children that we were going to have a laid back, low key summer. And then we had 1 million within a week. And then it just kept rolling forward. And so, yeah, it happened pretty quickly. And so I think I was still processing what was happening. And then my team wasn't prepared for that to happen. So like my website crashed and people were finding back doors into the website, which is a whole separate topic.
What do you mean finding back doors?
I guess if your website, I don't have the same website person now. But if your website isn't fully secure, and I wouldn't know because this is not my area of expertise, but they were finding backdoors into programs. They were finding backdoors into stuff that I obviously was not properly secured. And then there was all this attention on me. Like people came to me and they're like, I want you to teach me how to fast. And I was like, what? So I didn't have a formal program. But the irony is, so from that viral TED Talk in May of 2019, within like 2 weeks, I had created a program, which was the foreshadowing to IF45. And so when I tell people that the book that I completed last year, which was just published in March, that it was easier to write than I had anticipated because I had this existing program that became the backbone of the book with a lot of fleshing out. And so this is where all the lines make, all the little dots that got me to where I am started making sense, that was the universe's way of creating this opportunity. Like, are you going to step up and take, you know, full advantage? And that's a terrible way to explain it. Are you going to take full ownership of this opportunity that awaits you? Like, give people what they're asking for. People are coming to you. They want to learn how to fast. And, you know, obviously the complete irony is that the organizers of that second TEDx, so the TEDx Greenville organizers asked me to do a gender slanted talk. They were like, women all the time feel like they're underrepresented. We really want you to do a talk just about women. So, before then I worked with men and women. And then all of a sudden I was evidently only going to talk about women and fasting and the things that make us unique and why we need to fast differently. And so it's another opportunity where the universe gave me another blessing where I was able to continue to fine tune what I was doing, not realizing that in, December of 2018, when I accepted that talk, that I would then be doing all the amazing things I've been doing the last several years. So I always sit in complete gratitude. And truly, when I say that, it's not just for lip service. I really practice it every day, being true to who I am, but also acknowledging that these are blessings. These are amazing opportunities that came out of a talk that I did to demonstrate to my kids that I was okay. Like setting that pure intention. Like I never did a talk for any other reason other than challenging myself and wanting to show my kids I was okay. And the irony is last year I accepted an award and I cried through my entire acceptance speech. And anyone that knows me knows I'm not a particularly emotional person, but it was my brain finally processing the trauma of being hospitalized for 13 days and what came out of that, which if anyone's ever, gone through a traumatic experience in their lifetime, it's like opening up a can of worms. Like all the stuff you thought you were dealing with, it's like, oh no, the universe is going to throw you a wrench and now you got to work through all of it. So it gave me an opportunity to deal with stuff that I hadn't dealt with before. I'm a huge advocate of doing internal work all the time. Like I have a Reiki provider I work with. I've got an energy person. I have a therapist. And I think it's been important for my trajectory, my lifetime, to ensure that I'm consistently working on my stuff. And all of us have stuff. I'm just using it in air quotes. All of us have stuff, but working on the stuff so that I'm a better mother, I'm a better wife, I'm a better human being. I can give more to people by being honest about how I'm showing up and how authentic I'm being and how transparent I'm being and how honest I'm being. So I look at that as one enormous exercise in, you know, evolving as a human being and as an individual.
Okay, friends. People often ask me, what is the one supplement I cannot imagine my life without? And while there are a lot of supplements out there, a lot of ones that I love, a lot of ones that I advocate, there is one supplement that inspired me to create a whole supplement line. And that's because I take it every single day and I really can't imagine my life without it. That would be Serapeptase. And I'm about to tell you how to get up to 15% off on a special bottle version that we have that also saves you money. So Serapeptase is a proteolytic enzyme created by the Japanese silkworm. Now we make it in a lab, so it is vegan. When you take this enzyme in the fasted state, it actually goes into your bloodstream and it breaks down problematic proteins in your body. These are things that your immune system is often reacting to and that create inflammation. That's why it can do incredible, amazing things like clear your sinuses. That's why I first started taking it. You can completely say goodbye to allergy meds with Serapeptase. It reduces inflammation and pain. My friend just started taking it for her back pain and told me she was shocked at how effective it was, more so than the pain pills she normally was taking. It can help reduce cholesterol. It's even been shown in clinical studies to break down amyloid plaque in vitro and in vivo. Basically, it is a wonder supplement. And what's super cool about it is that it specifically breaks down those problematic non-living proteins. It doesn't harm healthy tissue. It actually helps protect that. That's because the function of the original enzyme in the silkworm is to break down the cocoon of the silkworm without actually harming the silkworm itself. And there aren't studies on this, but I really believe it can help catalyze your fast by enhancing the natural process of autophagy. Again, not studies on that, but from a mechanistic standpoint, it totally makes sense. Here's the thing. I was taking so many different brands of Serapeptase, and they always seemed a little hard on my stomach and have problematic ingredients in them, especially special enteric coatings where they wouldn't disclose what that was made of, which meant it probably contained problematic plastics. I knew I needed to make a change. That's why I created my Avalon X Serapeptase. It's what launched my Avalon X line. I will never stop taking it. It's one of my favorite things in my life, and the effects I experience are profound, and I hear that from all of you guys as well. We test it multiple times for purity and potency. It's free of all problematic fillers and common allergens. It comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And we even use the minimum amount of stickiness in the label on the bottle to help reduce problematic compounds. So if you want to tackle your inflammation, clear your brain fog, oh, it's amazing for brain fog, stop your allergies, attack amyloid plaque, reduce pain, so many things, you need Serapeptase. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code Melanie Avalon. But here's another thing. We actually have a special large bottle. It's the only supplement that we have right now in a large bottle. It's the 180 version and it saves you money. If Serapeptase is a part of your daily life, like it is mine, you definitely want our large bottle size, 180 capsules. It's the best way to save. And again, you can save even more with my Melanie Avalon 10% discount, or you can get 15% off that as well if you get a subscription, which, by the way, with a subscription, you could pause or cancel anytime after your first order. So it kind of makes sense to do a subscription because you save even more. If you want a supplement that you can actually feel the difference, I promise you, Serapeptase is the way to go. And then you might end up like me and want to give it as gifts to everybody because it's that incredible and can address so many issues. You can get this at avalonx.us. That's AVALONX.US. Again, there is the 90 capsule size and the 180 capsule size. You save more with the 180. Use the coupon code Melanie Avalon for 10% off or get a subscription for 15% off. And we will put all this information in the show notes.
I love hearing you say that about working on yourself and the therapists and all of that stuff, and hearing you cry during the acceptance speech and then how it related to, you know, your hospital experience. It's like, interestingly, I didn't realize the extent to which my hospital trauma had affected me. But then when I started working with my therapist on it, whenever it would come up in a therapy session, like the subject of actually just even doctors or any of that, I would just start bawling. And I think it, you know, it's so fascinating how we can hold trauma deep inside of us and not realize in our day-to-day life what it's doing until something, you know, opens it up. And so sort of like your experience when you were accepting that award, which award was that, by the way?
So I'm part of a Mindshare mastermind community. And so it was an award. It was like Health Influencer of the Year. But part of what made it so significant was, sometimes I don't think I'm necessarily cognizant of what other people's perceptions are of how we define success. And, you know, joining that mastermind for me came at exactly the right time. You know, it forced me to level up and stop being scared or tentative or fearful about, you know, embracing what had transpired in 2019. And so I'm very coachable. I tell everyone that, like, I'm very coachable. So when I got direction, I took it. And so it meant a lot to me because it meant out of, you know, thousands of people that are in this big community, I'm the person that they felt like best represented or, you know, help people define like who in this space is really doing amazing things. And so I kept saying very humbly, you have to understand, I just did that talk to show my kids I was okay. And from that came all of this incredible success professionally and personally. I mean, there have been so many things that have come from that that have allowed my family to do things we wouldn't have otherwise been able to do. And so, you know, I was raised kind of with the mindset of, you know, I have specific family members that have been incredibly, and this is really taking off on a tangent, so my apologies. I have family members who've been, you know, very, very successful. And I'd always been kind of conditioned to believe that as a nurse and a nurse practitioner, that I was just going to make a decent amount of money. And, you know, all these things kind of put in motion that I was going to be able to do a lot of different things. And so it goes back to that gratitude piece of just saying, you know, I acknowledge that decisions I made, you know, and things that were put into motion and things that happened, including winning that award very humbly, were just things that came along the way from a lot of hard work and effort. And I think sometimes people forget, you know, I don't know if you recall that there's a graphic out there that talks about like people's perception of success. They just see the top of the iceberg. And yet underneath there's all this other work. And so people will say, oh, you know, you're so fortunate. I'm like, yeah, but I've actually been working hard for a while. This didn't just happen, but I'm really humbly grateful that all these things have occurred. So yes, I think for both of us, you know, we definitely have been through, you know, some health challenges that provide a lens and a perspective that we're able to see people differently. And that is such a gift because there are a lot of people that go through life who don't ever see that. You know, they don't ever see adversity or they haven't experienced it. And so it colors their lens with which they view the world.
Yeah. Two thoughts about that. One is that I'm really grateful and it's really thrilling that we are alive at the time that we're alive right now because we are able to do this thing that we're doing in the health sphere that wasn't a thing, you know, even like five years ago, even like 10 years ago, which is this whole social media influencer sphere with health and spreading education and awareness. We're really able to create our worlds in that, which I just think is so cool because like with my background with acting in the entertainment industry and always wanting to do something related to that, it's a really cool hybrid that has manifested. And I just really love it. And the second piece was that because I've been hit with so many like diagnoses, you know, hypothyroidism, anemia, heavy metal toxicity, mold toxicity, even Lyme disease. I didn't know, or digestive issues, SIBO. For the longest time, I was like, someday I'll be grateful for this, but not really. I was like, maybe. But now I think I can honestly say I am because I wouldn't be doing all of this if that hadn't happened. And with each diagnosis that came, it really put me on a fervent tangent research craziness to try to find what was going on and how to address it, which has just led to a cumulative ocean of knowledge. Not to say that I know everything, but I think it's all worked for a purpose, like you were saying. Question about fasting. So when you first started fasting, how did you do it? What type of window?
Yeah, I started with like a 14:10 because in my mind I was like, I'm going to die if I'm not eating more regularly. I think this is many people face these concerns. And then I think fairly quickly within a week, I was probably doing a 16:8 and I felt really good. And the nice thing was that, you know, the way my work schedule was, I had a very part-time augmented schedule. They just kept accommodating whatever crazy schedule I asked for as a nurse practitioner. And so I was able to accommodate said crazy schedule because I could eat when I needed to. Oftentimes I would, you know, break my fast in the morning in between seeing patients. And then, you know, I picked my kids up from school at like 2:30. So then I would then eat another meal and then, you know, sit down with my kids when they had dinner. So initially probably a 14-10 and then kind of progressed to a 16-8. But back then I didn't know that variety was a good thing to do. And so I probably steadily kept at that pace for, gosh, probably 6 months. And then as I started doing more research and learning more, then I got more creative. And by then I think my husband had started fasting as well. And he just effortlessly, like he stays up later and likes to fast till a later point during the day. And so, you know, it was fascinating to kind of see how he was fasting. And then I would, you know, work with my women and see, you know, cause I, at that point I also had this kind of private business. So I was taking on clients and on days I wasn't working in the clinic or the hospital, I was, you know, working with these other people. And so it was really interesting and fascinating to me to see all the variables that are at play with women in particular. Like, whereas my husband could do the same fasting schedule every day effortlessly with no problems. And I couldn't do that. Like, I very early on recognized there were times in my menstrual cycle when I could fast easier than others, but I didn't really understand why. And so that probably got me down a rabbit hole of figuring out what was contributing to that.
Yeah. So glad to hear you talk all about that. That will be a little bit of a change, or not a change, a different perspective that I think you'll bring to the show, because both Jen and I, we are like your husband. like we do the, I mean, Jen maybe breaks it a little bit more than I do. We both do the one meal a day, all day, every day. We both have later windows. Mine is really late. Jen's is more normal, socially late with dinner. So it'll be really interesting to hear your perspective on the different windows and such. And so I'm curious, when you're working with women, like how many people are like me and Jen, where they do just stick to the same thing every day compared to more fluctuating windows or adjusting for their cycle or longer windows? What have you seen?
Yeah, well, I can tell you that if most people, if they're working with me, we have variety, because I think that's just fundamentally, I feel like that's important to embrace what's going on in our cycles while we're still getting cycles and just having variety. Like I remind my patients, we don't eat the same foods every day. We don't do the same types of exercise every day. We should fast differently most days, because I think our bodies are really primed, or, you know, if we want to think about it that way, for variety and adaptability. Now, everyone's an individual. You'll oftentimes hear me say the term bioindividuality, but it's really leaning into what makes you feel good. And for me, I don't feel good, and my Oura Ring barks at me if I eat late. And so as an example, we were talking before we started recording and we were laughing about our Oura Rings. And I said, my Oura Ring wants me in bed at 8:30, which is kind of a joke because I'm never in bed at 8:30, but I'm in bed. I endeavor to be in bed by 9:30. And Melanie was joking and saying her Oura tells her to go to bed at 2 a.m.
That's a true statement.
Yes. So it just goes to show you, I'm an early bird, you're a night owl, or if we want to kind of embrace the terminology of Dr. Michael Bruce, we might, you know, the dolphin, and I'm a lion, but I'm completely aligned with that. But to me, I guess because I'm looking at this as a middle-aged woman, the things that I see with OMAD that concern me for middle-aged women is, can you get your protein intake in? And so that's always like the basis of the conversation of, these are the macros that I want you to aim for. And that usually gets the conversation going, because when I was in my 20s and 30s, my macros were different. My sleeping was different. It was effortless. And that's something I didn't appreciate enough until I got to be where I am. Now it's like an art form in order to make sure I sleep through the night. But in all sincerity, you know, from my perspective, you know, based on like insulin sensitivity and looking at research on, you know, where we are in our menstrual cycles, those variations of fasting, you know, in terms of windows and macro breakdown can be very important. But I think first and foremost, it always goes back to honoring yourself as an individual. I can make recommendations, but I really try to teach women to experiment, to find what works best for them. But then also, you know, look at the science and say, okay, well, you know, the science says X, but that doesn't work for me. And I have to find something that's sustainable. And so I always say, like, I'm a complete realist. Like, I can say there's, we used to call it Ivory Tower back in the day, because I went to this big academic research center. Yeah, there were Ivory Tower nursing, and then there was reality. And so it's, I think of it very much the same way. Like, we can look at the research and make recommendations, but we'll have to be realists. Like, if you come to my house, Melanie, if you came to my house, I have two teenage boys. We have some junk food in my house, but it is the healthiest, quote unquote, junk food that is out there. because of some parameters that I set for my husband when we go grocery shopping. However, I'm a realist. Like when it comes down to it, we all have to live our lives. Like if I make a recommendation and someone says, I cannot do that, that does not work for me, that's okay. Like it goes back to the, you know, bio individuality. Does this work for you? Is it something that's sustainable? Because that's something that I think is unique, is that if something is not sustainable for you, you're not going to be successful with it. It's the recognition of what are your hell yeses and hell nos. And I have some, and I know you have some as well, but like my hell nos, I can't commit myself to doing because I cannot sustain that. So we want to make sure, or at least my endeavor is to make sure recommendations I make are something that can be potentially sustainable for someone as opposed to a quick fix. Like I'm not a big quick fix person. I will never be the person that's going to recommend the, you know, do this 5-day cleanse and lose 30 pounds. Like that's not sustainable. And that's crazy.
I bet listeners can now see even more why I'm so excited about having you on this show. I mean, you just referenced all the things I'm super excited about. One, the importance of bio-individuality and finding what works for you. I cannot express enough how important I think that is. And just, you know, being open to new ideas and, you know, really looking at the science and think, you know, knowing what you think is probably accurate, but also being open to different ideas and different things working. And then, yes, Cynthia does the things I do with like the Oura Ring. And I'll do another plug for your show, Everyday Wellness. So a lot of the guests, because Cynthia mentioned Dr. Michael Bruce, who wrote The Power of When. So a lot of the guests that I've had on the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast, Cynthia has had on her show as well. So that's another show for you guys to check out. If there are certain guests that you really like and would like to hear more content, that's amazing. And also, this is probably giving listeners ideas of questions to ask. So, you know, if you do have questions about fasting and the menstrual cycle and hormones and all of that, definitely start sending them because we will really be able to talk about them. Listeners are probably dying to know because I'm sure we have so many episodes together coming up where I'm sure we'll talk about this. But just briefly, how are you encouraging women to adjust fasting for their cycles?
Yeah. So if a woman has a regular cycle, so I'll just say, if you have the textbook 28-day cycle, you know, day one is when you start bleeding and up until day 14, you know, that's the follicular phase when estrogen predominates. And I always say estrogen is our superpower. We are more insulin sensitive. We can go keto or low carb. We can push our workouts. We can also do like all the things with fasting, longer fasts, 24-hour fast, shorter fast, whatever kind of fast you want to do, you can get away with it. Then we ovulate. Then we have, you know, the luteal phase when progesterone predominates. And progesterone is a hormone that is designed to, you know, be more, a little more mellow, a little more laid back. You might not have as much energy. You become increasingly less insulin sensitive, which is really important because we know most Americans are not insulin sensitive, you know, about 90% of the population, based on a study from 2018, which was pre-pandemic. And so you start to think about what changes do I need to make? So I always say that the closer you get to your menstrual cycle, this is usually when I will, you know, ask women to think about shorter fasting, like 12 hours of digestive rest, which is still a great, you're still doing great things for your body, 12 hours, 13 hours. And, you know, perhaps leaning into the fact that your body might need a little bit more in terms of quantity of carbohydrate to help with progesterone production. And so when I think about this, it could be as simple as 100 more. I don't count calories, and I want to be clear about that. I'm a macros counter. If you want to count macros, great. But it could be that you have half a cup of sweet potato, or maybe you're having a third of a cup of squash. And let me just also stick this little caveat in. I deal with middle-aged women. Middle-aged women, as they are getting closer to perimenopause, the 5 to 10 years preceding menopause, you become less insulin sensitive for a variety of reasons. One of them is that you're losing progesterone because your ovaries aren't producing as much and you are becoming increasingly more estrogen dominant. So you're having a lot of symptoms. But a lot of times when I'm talking about recommendations, it's really for most of the women that I'm talking to. However, this can apply to younger women. You're going to want a little more discretionary healthy carbohydrate. And by that, I mean, you know, don't go after like the bread and the pasta. get some real whole food sources. Maybe for a younger woman, you can go with a cup of berries. Maybe for a middle-aged woman, it's half a cup of berries, but experiment to see what works well for you. But understanding that as we are getting, you know, 5 to 7 days preceding our menstrual cycle, we are going to back off the gas of fasting. Maybe we're just doing 12 or 13 hours of digestive rest because we're having fluctuating amounts of progesterone. This is when women sometimes have sleep disturbances. This can be when women have more cravings. And I find if we're really attuned to the changes physiologically that are happening in our bodies, then all of a sudden the beautiful thing happens where we have less cravings. You're not struggling to get to 15 hours. I get DMs from women almost every day about this. And I just always say, if you're close to your menstrual cycle, don't fast for long times. And then when you start bleeding, you can go, you're heading back into your superpower phase. And so you can really push the envelope. And so that's kind of a general methodology. Now, if you're a perimenopausal woman with really irregular cycles, if you're someone who has PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome and has really irregular cycles, this is when I think testing can be helpful. And we can obviously go into this in more depth in the future. More often than not, PCOSers are insulin resistant and they have a luteal phase defect, meaning their bodies aren't producing adequate amounts of progesterone. So it can prolong this anovulatory or cycle without ovulation. That's why these women can have, you know, cycles of 40 days and they never ovulate, or even perimenopause when women are either on oral contraceptives or IUDs, or maybe they've had a hysterectomy but have their ovaries and they have no idea where they are, or they've had an ablation, they have no idea where they are in their cycle. There are definitely ways that you can kind of hack that, or maybe not hack, but you can kind of work around how best to strategize with fasting. And so a lot of different ways we can look at that. But I always say menopause is when women don't have to worry about those variables as much, but they do have other things they have to consider. So a lot to unpack. And definitely I want the listeners to be sending questions so that we can help honor wherever they are in their cycling or non-cycling journey.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see all the questions that I'm sure will come flooding in. Whenever I hear PCOS now, I always think of somebody we've had on both of our shows, Dr. Benjamin Bickman, and everything that he talks about with the role of insulin and PCOS. So I definitely recommend listeners check out those interviews if they're interested more in that.
I like bow at his temple. I think he's brilliant.
He's so amazing. He's so nice too.
I heard he's writing a new book.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you know what it's about?
I don't know. He keeps alluding to it. Like, what do you think I'm writing a new book about? And I'm like, Ben, about insulin. But what about insulin? That's always my response. I'm like, I'll have to like pay more attention to what he's showing on IG stories and what he's showing in his IG feed. Cause I think he's probably giving us hints.
Ooh. Oh, okay. He's going to have to come back on our shows for that one. So speaking about diet, actually before that, really quick question, is progesterone, it's the reason we get really hungry, right? Because doesn't it boost metabolism?
I mean, it can. And so the kind of mindset methodology is even if you don't want to get pregnant, your body is preparing itself for the potential pregnancy. And so, yes, it's going to increase and it falls along with that insulin, lack of less insulin sensitivity. Your body is like looking for a food source. It is looking for a growth mindset. I mean, it is a time period in our bodies where, you know, the potential, and I always put air quotes, potential for, you know, an ovum and fertilization, all those things. I mean, it's really kind of getting your body fine-tuned to prepare for the potentiality of that happening, even if it's not what you want to have happen. But yeah, it nicely correlates with the cravings that drive, you know, more caloric consumption. And it's interesting because a lot of women will say, that's the only time in my cycle I'll crave salt, or that's the only time in my cycle I crave sugar. And I think it's our body's way of trying to ensure those additional macros or calories, however you want to think about it. It's your body's biologic drive to prepare for the potentiality of growing a human.
Okay, friends. People often ask me, what is the one supplement I cannot imagine my life without? And while there are a lot of supplements out there, a lot of ones that I love, a lot of ones that I advocate, there is one supplement that inspired me to create
a whole supplement line, and that's because I take it every single day, and I really can't imagine my life without it. That would be Serapeptase. And I'm about to tell you how to get up to 15% off on a special bottle version that we have that also saves you money. So Serapeptase is a proteolytic enzyme created by the Japanese silkworm. Now we make it in a lab, so it is vegan. When you take this enzyme in the fasted state, it actually goes into your bloodstream and it breaks down problematic proteins in your body. These are things that your immune system is often reacting to and that create inflammation. That's why it can do incredible, amazing things like clear your sinuses. That's why I first started taking it. You can completely say goodbye to allergy meds with Serapeptase. It reduces inflammation and pain. My friend just started taking it for her back pain and told me she was shocked at how effective it was, more so than the pain pills she normally was taking. It can help reduce cholesterol. It's even been shown in clinical studies to break down amyloid plaque in vitro and in vivo. Basically, it is a wonder supplement. And what's super cool about it is that it specifically breaks down those problematic non-living proteins. It doesn't harm healthy tissue. It actually helps protect that. That's because the function of the original enzyme in the silkworm is to break down the cocoon of the silkworm without actually harming the silkworm itself. And there aren't studies on this, but I really believe it can help catalyze your fast by enhancing the natural process of autophagy. Again, not studies on that, but from a mechanistic standpoint, it totally makes sense. Here's the thing. I was taking so many different brands of Serapeptase, and they always seemed a little hard on my stomach and have problematic ingredients in them, especially special enteric coatings where they wouldn't disclose what that was made of, which meant it probably contained problematic plastics. I knew I needed to make a change. That's why I created my Avalon X Serapeptase. It's what launched my Avalon X line. I will never stop taking it. It's one of my favorite things in my life, and the effects I experience are profound, and I hear that from all of you guys as well. We test it multiple times for purity and potency. It's free of all problematic fillers and common allergens. It comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And we even use the minimum amount of stickiness in the label on the bottle to help reduce problematic compounds. So if you want to tackle your inflammation, clear your brain fog, oh, it's amazing for brain fog, stop your allergies, attack amyloid plaque, reduce pain, so many things, you need Serapeptase. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code Melanie Avalon. But here's another thing. We actually have a special large bottle. It's the only supplement that we have right now in a large bottle. It's the 180 version, and it saves you money. If Serapeptase is a part of your daily life, like it is mine, you definitely want our large bottle size, 180 capsules. It's the best way to save. And again, you can save even more with my Melanie Avalon 10% discount, or you can get 15% off that as well if you get a subscription, which, by the way, with a subscription, you could pause or cancel anytime after your first order. So it kind of makes sense to do a subscription because you save even more. If you want a supplement that you can actually feel the difference, I promise you, Serapeptase is the way to go. And then you might end up like me and want to give it as gifts to everybody because it's that incredible and can address so many issues. You can get this at avalonx.us. That's AVALONX.US. Again, there is the 90 capsule size and the 180 capsule size. You save more with the 180. Use the coupon code Melanie Avalon for 10% off or get a subscription for 15% off. And we will put all this information in the show notes.
Okay. Very, very fascinating. So a question about, because you mentioned, you know, the dietary choices, the protein, counting macros, what in general, and again, we'll dive deep into this in future episodes, but in general, what type of macronutrient approaches are you recommending for women? Do you find women can, you know, find success on different macros? And also, because I imagine, you know, I don't know what percent exactly of our audience, but there is a portion of our audience that does fasting and they don't really want to make any changes to their dietary choices. So what do you find with that? Can you find women can be successful without changing what they're eating as well?
Yes, actually, I have a college sorority sister who said to me, I did nothing else other than eliminate breakfast. And she wasn't eating the healthiest diet, admittedly. And she lost like 10 pounds, like right off the bat. And so she was thrilled. And it was later that she then became more vested and interested in changing her diet. So can people lose weight just with fasting? Absolutely. But I find for most women, especially someone who's experiencing weight loss resistance, there's a reason for why that's happening. And so that the common errors that I see being made with macros are as follows. One, not enough animal-based protein. Number two, too much of the wrong type of fat. And the most consumed fat in the United States right now, a la Ben Bickman, is soybean oil. number three is the wrong types of carbohydrates. I'm not anti-carb, but I do find for most women, they have to flip all that. So more protein, which is going to help with satiety, which is going to help with muscle protein synthesis. I know you're going to be interviewing Dr. Gabrielle Line, who I think is absolutely brilliant. And she talks a lot about muscle protein synthesis and why you need to be hitting your protein macros, changing up those fats. I'm not anti-fat either. And then changing up your carbs. And so the methodology in my mindset when I'm teaching someone about intermittent fasting is talking about the macros, like more protein with your meals. It could be maybe you're eating 25 grams of protein with your meals, but really you need to be hitting 50. So you're slowly working up and really thinking about thoughtfully about the types of fats. Like I do better with plant-based fats like olives, coconut oil, et cetera. I don't do as well with animal-based fats, lard, duck fat, et cetera. Some people do. I just don't. I also gravitate towards leaner meat. I do better with that. So really, this is where the bio-individuality piece is really interesting. And then carbs. I eat carbs, but I cycle my carbs. And so I think it really goes back to, you know, what is sustainable? So you said, you know, there are probably listeners that they can fast, but they don't want to change their diet. So what is sustainable? Maybe it's just fasting and that's okay. You know, if you want to take it up a notch, it's changing your macros. If you are a middle-aged woman and you are dealing with sarcopenia, which is not a question of if, but when, meaning muscle loss with aging, it will happen if you are not consuming enough animal-based protein, you're not strength training, and you're not sleeping well. And for a lot of women, they struggle with all of those. You know, that can be a really real possibility. And so I think it really goes back to what is sustainable, because you and I can talk about the intricacies of different macros with different nutritional paradigms. But if someone's listening saying, hey, I can't do that and sustain it, then you stay with like, just do the fasting piece. And then if you want to add another layer, then maybe you tweak your macros. And then if you really are like super, like I would say, if you're the type A class, you know, you're like, you want to be the teacher's pet, that next level is like taking it up a notch and getting really nuanced about ingredients and where things are sourced from. But I remind people all the time, we have to meet them where they are. The way that people can successfully fast and change their lifestyle is based on meeting them where they are. I got shamed the other day, which drives my team crazy, because I had done a post about like quick protein that people could, you know, take with them or quick to put together. And someone said, I cannot believe that you are recommending a protein powder. And I said, well, I'm all about meeting people where they are. And do I use protein powder? Yeah, not every day, but I do on occasion. And so I think it goes back to the same thing. Like my intent is, you know, things that we talk about, I want things to be sustainable and I want people to feel like they're getting those wins and that they feel good about themselves and that they're not feeling ashamed. Like that's one of the things about social media that's good/bad is that if we compare ourselves to everyone else, we're not going to feel good about ourselves. Like we have to just like, what's working for me? What can I sustainably do? What makes me feel good? What makes me sleep well? That's the stuff you lean into. Not the stuff that when you compare yourself to the fit pro who's photoshopped on every social media platform that is not sustainable or realistic for anyone. Like if that's what you're using as your, you know, that's who you're comparing yourself to. I mean, you're setting yourself up for disappointment because that person doesn't even exist.
I know. I'm so happy to hear you talk about the protein stuff because that is just so, so important to me. I think it's so important. And I think especially women who struggle with not feeling full or hunger or cravings, really focusing on protein can be pretty magical for that. And I know we've both interviewed a lot of people who talk about that as well. I'm really excited to interview Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. Thank you, by the way. Cynthia introduced me to her. Rob Wolf talks about it a lot, who I absolutely love. And so teaser, I think because we just had a question come in recently about recommended protein powders and our thoughts on protein powders. So we'll have to maybe answer that next week and we can hear more about that. Here's a big question for you. I bet people are dying to know. What are your thoughts on the clean fast?
I am very aligned with clean fasting. And the reason why is I want people to get their best results. And the best results mean you don't cheat. If you are coming from a standard American diet and you are completely sedentary, you may need to have a dirty fast for a period of time until your body is able to go a little longer without food. Like if I'm asking someone to go from 3 meals a day, snacks and mini meals, and a highly processed, hyper palatable foods, I mean, that is going to be a big shift for them. So, you know, I have the methodology about how we go about doing this, but it's a slow Band-Aid tear off. Like we're not going cold turkey. I want someone to be able, remember what I said, we want this to be sustainable. So it starts with no snacking, and then we move on to restructuring your meals. And then we go from, you know, dinner to breakfast. And then, you know, maybe this person's going to add a little bit of MCT oil to their coffee, or they're going to add in a little bit of cream because they're really struggling. Like their body is not metabolically flexible, and metabolic inflexibility does not happen overnight. And it's not going to be fixed overnight. Like that's unfortunately the conditioning with the toxic diet culture here in the United States, that people assume that, you know, they're going to be able to remedy whatever health issue they're having. And I have to remind people, like, it probably took you 10 years to get here. It's not going to change overnight, but we are going to make small incremental changes that are going to make it easier for you to get to your goals. And so when I talk about clean fasting, I always say for certain people, that is a goal. For some people, they're like a duck to water, and it's not a big deal for them to be able to drink bitter teas and drink unflavored electrolytes and et cetera. But for a lot of other people, it's meeting them where they are, but it's always with the understanding, like you're not going to have a stick of butter in your coffee every day for the rest of your life, right? So like really being very clear and intentional about what are your goals, what's realistic for you, no shaming, because I think Dave Asprey does a really good job of talking about how he was a metabolic inflexibility disaster, and that bulletproof coffee, well, back then it wasn't called that, but fatty coffees were what allowed him to kind of get to a point where he could consider fasting, like truly fasting. And so I think they have their place, but dirty fasting is not the methodology that I really come from. I do think clean fasting is the best way to get the results. It's also when people realize, like, and there are fit pros out there, God bless them, they talk about, oh, if it's under 50 calories, it doesn't count. I'm like, it's food. It technically counts. And that stuff can add up. And so if you're someone that has tried fasting and you feel like you're not getting the results you want, it could be because you're unknowingly consuming these types of things. And this is impacting insulin sensitivity, and you're not clean fasting, and you're not becoming fat adapted. And so to answer your question again, yes, I'm a proponent of clean fasting, but it's always from the context of like, what are your goals? Because some people will fat fast like a champ, or they want to do bone broth fast. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, that's a different type of fasting, and it's a different goal, and kind of looking at what people want to do. But clean fasting is the way if you want to do it in a way that I believe is sustainable and also is going to get you the best results. So it's really with that understanding. Like I always say, if you're weight loss resistant and you're really struggling and you really want to get, you want to get back to change body composition, or you want to get back to a healthier weight, then you have to toss out the extras. It's just like condiments. Like if you're putting 5 tablespoons of salad dressing on your salad and you're wondering why you're weight loss resistant, it's like, let's look at our condiments. It could be that little, like that kind of data and information can be the missing link for why you are struggling. So definitely gives the listeners a sense of, you know, that we're definitely aligned on this, but it's always in the context of who are you? How metabolically flexible are you? You know, what are your goals? I think all of that's super important.
So I love hearing this as well, because I love the clean fast, obviously. And I think we've had very consistent messaging on this show about the importance of the clean fast, which, you know, is basically water, black coffee, tea, unsweetened. I think I've been consistent about this when I have been asked this or addressed it. And it's because my own experience of starting fasting, I did not jump in to the clean fast automatically. I was doing, at the time, artificial sweeteners, like commercial artificial sweeteners. So not like stevia or something like that. And I think I was probably doing a little bit of cream in my tea or coffee. And that worked for me. Like it worked as a transition. And yes, ultimately I did come to the quote clean fast, but I know for me, it actually worked fine transitioning that way. So I know we've always been a proponent of just jumping in, committing to the clean fast. And I do think for a lot of people that actually will make it easier, even if they think it won't. But I also think it's okay for people to go on the path that they need to go to. So sounds like we're very much aligned in that aspect. Really quick thing about Dave. So I've had Dave on my show. Cynthia has been on Bulletproof Radio, which is super cool. And has Dave been on your show as well?
He has his last book, which I'm fast your way. I was like trying to, it was like having a little mental moment. I was like, fast this way. Yes.
Did you know, it's just a little fun fact. Did you know he just released a new coffee line?
I do, because I think he disassociated with Bulletproof.
I just learned about this because we actually have a mutual friend, and he was saying that I think he's still a shareholder in Bulletproof Coffee, but they wouldn't let him have the coffee in his coffee shops. So he had to make his own. Just a little fun fact. In any case, we are coming up on time. I'm sure that listeners are just, you know, so excited about sitting questions and the future of this show. Maybe a good question to end with, because you did just recently release Intermittent Fasting Transformation, which, friends, go get this book right now. It is such a valuable resource. It is, you know, all of Cynthia's thoughts on all of these things that we've touched on, but in great detail. It is specifically speaking to women, which is amazing. It's a deep, deep dive into all the hormones, which you guys know I love the deep dive into the science of things. Maybe two little quick questions to end with about the book. What was the most challenging thing writing the book? And also, what were you most excited to share in creating this book?
Oh, great question. Actually, I've never been asked that question. The book proposal. Now, unless you've ever written a book proposal, you have no idea how difficult it is.
I remember when you were writing it.
Oh, it was painful. I didn't get a lot of guidance initially by my lit agent, who's wonderful.
We have the same agent, yeah.
Yes. And so I didn't get a lot of guidance. That was issue number one. Once I got said guidance, I realized how far off base I was. So that was the hardest part by far. Like, it was much easier to write the book, which says a lot. In terms of like what I was so excited about was probably this book was written with the intent. Remember we started like talking about intention, like written with the intent of this is the book I wish I had when I was younger. And that was the sole intent, that I really wanted women to feel heard and understood. And, you know, by sharing my embarrassing perimenopausal journey, that women would align with that and understand. And this is not a book just written for middle-aged women. It's written really with the intent to be helpful to all women, women in 20s and 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. And so I think what got me excited was the realization that all of what had been percolating in my brain for the last 6 years was coming to fruition. And knowing that the intention had been set, that I wanted this book to make an impact. And so women would feel really loved and would feel like they were in, like, literally I was there with them, because I'm such a heart-centered person, which I know Melanie knows this, but the listeners may not yet know this, that the reason why I became a nurse and the reason why I became a nurse practitioner and the reason why I left clinical medicine and became an entrepreneur was because I wanted to make an impact. I wanted to connect with people. I wanted people to feel heard and valued. And there was such an enormous void in this space. And so there weren't any nurses that were writing books like this. And so I felt like it was an opportunity to really, you know, fill a void that was really needed. And so, you know, it comes from that heart-directed place of wanting to help women navigate these stages in their lives in a way where they felt hopeful as opposed to scared. Because that's the unfortunate thing, Melanie, is that I feel like a lot of women fear getting older for a variety of reasons. But what I hear from women most often is that women are fearful of not having a sense of what's happening to their bodies as they get older. And this, when I say older, you could be like 35. And when I say older, like the things I didn't know were happening behind the scenes in my body because I had two little people that required all my attention. I think there's really not enough for women that allows them to feel empowered about these life stages in a way that's accessible information. Because you can go read a textbook, or you can read a book that is written by a clinician who's trying to prove to you how smart they are. I wanted it to be accessible. And I'm sure this is kind of becoming a convoluted explanation, but there are a lot of things that were on my mind when I was writing it. But the intent was to make women feel heard and to make sure people understood that I cared and I wanted them to feel empowered and not to be scared.
Well, that is definitely the feeling that I had reading your book. So goal accomplished for listeners. We'll put a link to the book in the show notes so that you can get it. And Cynthia does record the audiobook for it. So it is on Audible. They're one of the sponsors for our show. So that's really exciting. And again, the show notes for today's episode will be at ifpodcast.com/episode266. And those show notes will have a full transcript and links to everything that we talked about. So definitely check that out. And again, just a reminder, if you would like to get the mysterious missing episode number one of this show, those many, many years ago, and also help welcome Cynthia to the show, just go to iTunes, find your old iTunes review and update it, or write a new iTunes review and include somewhere in that review. It can be however short or long you like, but just include somewhere in there what you're excited about having Cynthia on board as the new co-host of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. So, oh my goodness, this is such a good moment. I'm so happy. We're like, whew, first one in the books.
Well, and I think, you know, for me, because I interview people on my podcast, it's so different to be just talking. It's kind of refreshing.
Oh, it's fun.
It's kind of refreshing. I have to be honest, like as much as I have two podcasts on Monday and I'm like knee deep in prep work, but it's nice to be in a position where I'm like talking to a trusted friend, talking about topics that we both love and embrace, and hoping that our conversation inspires others to do great things. You know, there's so many levels, so many layers to what I want to communicate.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. That's actually something that Jen and I would reflect on a lot when we were doing the show, which is, you know, because we have so many other things going on, like you do as well. The fun, amazing thing about this show is all of that just kind of fades away and we get to just, you know, come here and talk, and it's just like a conversation with friends, but we have a wonderful, amazing community listening with us. Yeah. So I think it's going to be really fun. I'm excited. All right. Well, again, the show notes will be at ifpodcast.com/episode266. You can get all of these stuff that we like at ifpodcast.com/stuff we like. You can follow us on Instagram. I am Melanie Avalon. Your handle is Cynthia Thurlow, right? Just your name?
No, but I'm realizing like when I changed everything over from my old business name to just my name, it was never so easy. So it's Cynthia_Thurlow_, just to make things more complicated.
Okay. So I got it. Cynthia_Thurlow_. Just look for the verified, the verified profile. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's everything. This has been absolutely wonderful, and I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember, everything we discussed on this show does not constitute medical advice, and no patient-doctor relationship is formed. If you enjoyed the show, please consider writing a review on iTunes. We couldn't do this without our amazing team. Administration by Sharon Merriman, editing by Podcast Doctors, show notes and artwork by Brianna Joyner, transcripts by Speech Docs, and original theme composed by Leland Cox and recomposed by Steve Saunders. See you next week.